Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now you're very welcome along to the football show. Very happy to welcome back a familiar voice and face if you're watching. Kevin Kilbane, hello.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm very well, my man. There's a...
My headphone's just fallen out here as
that's
well.
All right.
I said that. So that's the excitement that you bring, Joe, you know.
Steady, just take a breath, you know, take a breath. There's a Kevin Kilbane in that screen. There's a Kevin Kilbane over my shoulder.
I know, it does feel a bit surreal actually seeing that fella above your shoulder there, yeah. Yeah. I'd rather be the fella above your right shoulder, that's what it'll be, yeah.
Johnny Sexton, well indeed.
Yeah.
So listen, briefly, we should say, I'm speaking to you, certainly not on air. Congratulations, little one around the house.
Thank you, yeah.
Hands full
today, yeah. So yeah, it's been good. It's been great, yeah. It's yeah, bring back the old memories, doesn't it? But it's great. It is great. She's doing well. She's doing fantastically well, actually. So yeah, no real dramas. Night feeds, staying up overnight and things like that, you know, the usual stuff that everyone's been through, but it's good fun. She's great, yeah. She's a little stunner, yeah.
Great. Listen, congrats. Must be just lovely time. And you're changing nappies. You're stepping up to the plate, I hope.
Joe, if any man in this day and age is not changing nappies, there's a big problem, isn't there? Let's be honest. Come on. I can imagine you. I'm waiting for the day, Joe, when you tell me. I'm waiting for this day. And then I'll see you with the father. Now, this is the one thing that I want to see. But anyway. But yes, of course, Joe. Of course. Yeah, definitely.
Good man. So, I don't know when we last talked on air. It's been a while. A lot going on in the world of football. We can safely say Man City are going to win the league. 21 wins in a row.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for the first kind of 5, 6, 7 games of this 21 in a row stretch, it's not like they were tearing it up. There were like 1-0 wins or 2-0 wins. They weren't necessarily catching the eye. And at that stage, it was all about Man United, who were top of the table, and City had all these games in hand. But they've just kept going and going and going. And now suddenly here they are looking almost invincible.
Yeah, but judging them from maybe last season, certainly pre-COVID last year, up to Christmas during last season, the form wasn't too dissimilar. I'd agree with that. Watching a lot of the games, they weren't pulling up trees, but I think they were able to grind results out in a way that they weren't necessarily able to do. Defensive structure to the side, John Stones coming back from absolutely nowhere because, I mean, he was being touted with a move to Arsenal, even West Ham, I think, in recent seasons I've seen, or in the last year or so. His form has improved dramatically. They look stable defensively. And obviously, they've got a top-class goalkeeper. But, yeah, I don't think they were playing the real great football that we'd seen from them. They've obviously got a class with De Bruyne and, you know, a little bit of magic here and there from Sterling and Mahrez. But I don't think the form was that much more improved than it was maybe last season up to Christmas. And then all of a sudden, after off the back of getting those 1-0 wins, as you say, and grinding out those results, the form started to come and a lot of the players, Gundogan really came into his own through that. And I think, well, he absolutely is his best form since he's come to the Premier League, because I still had my uncertainties around Gundogan while watching him over the last few seasons. But I think he's playing more advanced. I think he's got a bit more freedom to get forward and be that second striker at times, so I think it's probably suited in getting into advanced positions. But definitely in the last month, 6 weeks, if you're watching the games, which I mean I've seen three of the games in the last month, and they are playing great football again. You know, they're playing an expansive type of football that we expect from Guardiola and his side, but also in the final third they've been devastating. I think they're a little bit more direct as well, actually, from watching City in recent seasons, which I think, I mean, Liverpool probably changed the mould over the last couple of seasons with how they started to play, with having that real pacing behind. They started to go a little bit more direct. I think you're seeing it a little bit more from Man City now. I think they're passing forward a lot quicker. And it's been good to watch. It has been very, very good to watch. Watching City, definitely.
Mm. Cancelo was catching the eye, right back slash midfield general. I'd love to have almost a 90 minutes end on view and just get to see exactly what he's doing, yeah. when he's doing it, why he's doing it, because he seems
to be on player camp.
Well, it'd be great because he seems to be doing all sorts and popping up in all sorts of areas, and I don't think anybody's found an easy way to handle him thus far. What's he doing for you?
Well, I think when you see him in general, and I think anyone that's going to play at the base of that City midfield, I think he is quite disciplined when he sits there, when he plays in the right back position. I think he's quite disciplined in holding the position. I think if you watch Guardiola, so we've spoken about that over the years, about the positional sense of the side, how they make the pitch so big, coming back into a condensed way when they lose the ball, like most of the best sides do now anyway. But keeps the game very, very simple. I don't think he does anything, you know, overly elaborate. I don't think he's overly elaborate when he gets onto the ball. I don't think he's not the sort of player that's going to be doing what De Bruyne does and hitting, raking passes and passing forward quickly. But I think by keeping it simple, I think it's his best way. And I think that's where what I've noticed about him especially, I think where he's really caught the eye by City, when maybe in the last couple of seasons they have had defensive issues, Fernandinho's had to play in defence. They've not had anyone, I don't think, that's played in that sort of mould when they've played there as well, that's had discipline to play there and be that little bit of a playmaker for them. I think he's done that well. So, yeah, I think that's where he's impressed.
I was listening to Gary Neville after one of the games, and he's at the stadium, which, you know, is a really nice way to get a sense of what City are doing.
Yeah.
And so
that's what I miss. You do miss it, don't you? We miss going to games. Like, it's,
oh, stop.
You know, over here is different, of course, it is for me, but you miss getting that picture. You do miss a lot. You miss a lot, certainly, when you're covering games as well.
Well, what he said was, so Man City have a lot of possession high up the field, always have, always will, you know, even if they are being a bit more direct at times. But he was saying, you know, last year, if they lost the ball high up the field, there was a very often quick and direct route to their goal if you broke. You know, it was too easy to just cut right through the middle and be in on goal.
Yeah.
He said what's happening now is that you've got Diaz, obviously, who's been a revelation, and you've Stones, who's rehabilitated. So if City have the ball high up, he was saying, you've your two centre-halves, you have Fernandinho in front of them, and you have the right back and the left back, whoever they are, stepping inside alongside Fernandinho. So suddenly you've got this bank of three and then two centre-halves behind them, and it's this fairly rock solid five waiting for you if you win the ball. And like, it sounds so simple, and I'm sure it's nothing that lots of other teams aren't doing perhaps, but that was Neville's sense of why they looked that bit more solid, certainly not as susceptible on the break.
Yeah, I think so. One other thing, I mentioned Stones before, you know, his resurgence as well, but I think John Stones, whenever we've seen him over the years and the chances he's taken, not just with the ball, but I think without the ball, John Stones has always tried to step in front of strikers. He's tried to read the game quickly to step in. And I think he's not doing that as much. I think John Stones has been a little bit more cautious. I think he's probably, he's not getting any younger as well. Maybe his pace, he's never been the quickest as it is, but maybe he feels as though he has been exposed. Maybe he's watched videos back of himself where he has been exposed. And I think he's been a lot more of a steadying influence. When you watch the games again, you don't get a feel for it because you're not at the match, but you certainly feel that he's more of a lot more of an organizer within that back four, back five, however they've played at times. So I think that's certainly helped them as well. So they've been able to have that stable platform when they've been going forward. But also, and probably what Neville's touching on there is, I think they are becoming more organized, actually talking to each other a little bit, rather than actually saying, look, we won't go and press one guy that's going to leave us exposed on a 2v1. We will stay on a 2v2 now. We'll stay on a 3v3, and we'll leave ourselves defensively more stable. That's probably what Neville's trying to get at within that as well, where they certainly have been more stable. But John Stones, I feel, has certainly, when you've seen John Stones at his best over the years, he's been stepping in. He's been, you know, a little bit gung-ho at times. I think he's not like that anymore. I think he's maybe started to grow up a little bit, but also, he's starting to give a bit more stability to the side.
That's interesting. So for instance, if, you know, on 10 occasions, ball has gone into forwards' feet, Stones might step in brilliantly and win it 7 or 8 times out of 10, but the 2 or 3 times it doesn't, they're badly exposed.
It looks bad. Yeah, it looks bad as well.
So now he's feeling,
how's that happened?
Yeah. So now he's saying, you know what, I'll be a bit more mature here. If you have to have the ball with your back to goal in a certain position, I'm going to let you have it.
Well, exactly. Giving the strikers probably a little bit more respect, ultimately, giving them a yard, not necessarily wanting to go too tight, especially on that initial ball that's played into them. You're almost saying, I'll let the striker take the touch, I'll let him have experience, and then maybe I'll try and nick it on his second touch or even his third touch if he's going to keep hold of the ball, because most of the teams that City play against are having to play a counter-attacking way anyway. So what John Stones has maybe learned, I feel, if you're playing against a counter-attacking side, if you let that striker take his first touch, you can step in, because there's going to, obviously the players are sitting that deep. They're going to have to travel 40, 50 yards and beyond that to get into support. And he's recognised maybe that I can actually give myself a little bit more time. It doesn't necessarily have to be the first ball that I'm winning. That I've noticed it a few times with him. I don't know if it's a conscious thing. I really don't. I don't know if it's something that he's worked on, but it's certainly something that I've noticed where he's not been as hasty to step in and win the ball quickly.
So Aguero's coming back and Jesus, you know, they're waiting maybe for him to hit the heights they hope he'll hit. But
yeah,
there's you know, there's been a lot of games where they're doing this without an out and out striker, and it hasn't hurt them thus far. It hasn't hurt them thus far.
Jesus has probably adapted to that type of role, not necessarily a goal scorer. Aguero is an out and out goal scorer when he plays, whereas Jesus, when he plays, he allows Sterling to score. He allows Gundogan to score. He is a little bit selfless. I know he scored the goals the other night, and he finished the his second goal, wasn't it? It was actually a lovely finish of the night as well. Yeah. But he is playing that role more, I'd feel, as well. Yeah.
So therefore, do you think Guardiola will have it in his plans to go out and get an out-and-out striker over the summer? Or will he feel, do you know what, this works fine with the players I have without one? Because, you know, Haaland, there's an arms race brewing now to get Haaland, isn't there?
Well, if he comes available, then City are the obvious club that's going to be in for him. There's going to be several, I'm sure, that's going to be in for him. It just depends on where he wants to go, isn't it? That's the thing. The link from his father may play into that. I'm not too sure, but
Do City need a striker? Does this system work just fine?
Not with the way that they're playing. Not with the way that they're playing. No. It's been interesting to see Liverpool with the criticism that Thiago's getting, because you know, when we've watched Liverpool over the years, when they've not necessarily last season when they were excellent, but in previous seasons before that, when they were playing good football and they weren't necessarily able to dominate games, it was maybe a midfield where you're going, they need someone that's just going to be a bit more patient, hold on to the ball a little bit. That would become an exposed because he's not necessarily good defensively. If you flip that to City, that it's working for them, that they've got a striker that's not necessarily going to be scoring 30, 35 goals a season. It might be a player that's going to get you 15 to 18 like Firmino at Liverpool. Mm. And it might not necessarily work throughout the side, but if Haaland comes available and City can get him, they're going to go for him, aren't they? Let's be honest. It'll be stupid not to, really.
We'd Pat Nevin on a couple of weeks ago. It was after Haaland and Mbappe had scored in those consecutive nights in the Champions League. It was just kind of amazing moment to watch, almost the baton being handed over to these two. And Nevin, you know, a great judge of a player and very kind of thoughtful with his views. And he was saying, Haaland is going to be and is the better player by a mile. He was like, for me, it's Haaland. And you're hearing other people saying,
and Mbappe.
Yeah. So
I wouldn't agree with that.
Would you not?
I wouldn't agree with that. I think as a player individually, as I'm talking for pure talent, if you're talking about a player who's one-on-one with the defender, I'd take Mbappe. I think Mbappe's technically better. I do feel that as a player, hold up play. If you watch Haaland, even now, I watched Dortmund a couple of weeks ago, balls still do bounce off him. I'm not saying that's not going to be the case with Mbappe. I'm talking as a technical footballer and maybe awareness for others as well. Mm. An all-round footballer. There's still a lot to learn, Mbappe. I would take Mbappe, but if you're looking at a player that's going to be an out-and-out number nine, just playing that number nine position, I'd take Haaland. But I think Mbappe is much more adaptable. And I think if you're a footballer that'd be on the training ground, I think you absolutely would be saying that Mbappe is a better footballer than Haaland. But they both have their own, obviously, their own strengths. As a number nine, Haaland as a number nine absolutely is certainly the best around right now. Absolutely is, yeah.
So to be fair, they're slightly different players in slightly different positions.
They are different players, exactly. I mean, Mbappe's played off the right, hasn't he? He's played off the left, predominantly off the left, really, where he has actually played. So, yeah, they are different players. But if you're talking about the talent, absolute talent, it's been the same with Messi and Ronaldo over the years. I think anyone would accept Lionel Messi is the better footballer without a shadow of a doubt. And that's the same with Mbappe and Haaland. If you're talking about a technical player and the ability itself, Mbappe is a better footballer, yeah.
Mm. Either way, look, it's going to be fun watching them. Holy moly.
Yeah, definitely. I think that we're looking forward to it. I think we're all looking forward to it. Over the next, you know, hopefully we get another 10 years out of them and they both stay injury-free or relatively injury-free. It's, they're going to have downs. They're going to have bad spells. They're going to have, you know, spells where they're not necessarily scoring or as consistent. But let's just hope that we can get the same sort of fireworks we've had out of Ronaldo and Messi over the last 10 years, yeah.
I know, because when you think about it, it's actually amazing the extent to which Messi, and maybe especially Ronaldo, given the pace he would go at it, they never had those injuries which diminished them. They never had that Michael Owen hamstring tear. They kept going and
that's
kept
right.
going. Like Haaland and Mbappe are, they're thoroughbreds and you don't want that injury. Now, look, maybe technology and sports science is such that they'll be fine, because I think Michael Owen's hamstring issue, to use that example, was misdiagnosed initially. But at the same time, probably doesn't take much for the hamstrings to just start feeling vulnerable.
Look at Gareth Bale. He's a prime example of that, isn't he? Look at Gareth Bale 4 or 5 years ago, and he was just this sensational player. And I know that he's still got the ability, the two goals that he scored at the weekend or the other day, you're still seeing the talent that he has. But he's certainly, he looks to me like he's not moving well. He doesn't look like he's got the pace that he once had. And that's obviously injuries. He's had calf injuries. He's had hamstring injuries. And, you know, even with modern technology and the modern medicine that we could point to now, it's not necessarily always going to be the case that you can actually look after your body and have a straightforward career injury free.
Because I remember Ryan Giggs said that for I think most of his 30s, he basically stopped sprinting full out.
Yeah, that was clear to see, wasn't it? As well, Giggs adapted his game. He was playing more on the inside, you know. And I think United were. If you look back to United from that 90s team when they had Kanchelskis and Giggs and these players, they were actually a brilliant counter-attacking side. Those two players especially were having to travel with the ball, take them up the pitch quickly. Mm. Giggs absolutely changed his game. And I think United changed the style of play anyway, didn't they? They were dominating the ball more, so they had to change the game with sides are dropping off them a lot more. So I think it suited them that United had to play a different way anyway.
Yeah. Did you at, I don't know what age, 32, 33 territory, did you stop sprinting flat out a little bit?
I honestly had a lot of issues with my back that probably I didn't know I'd had till my early 30s, when I was probably suffering with that from my mid-20s. I spoke to you many times probably about this. I think my game absolutely changed when I was probably 22, 23. I'd gone from playing a certain way where I was a little bit more of a player that could go out onto the pitch and almost do what he wanted. That's what I could do as a kid. Certainly at West Brom, even the early days when I first came into the Irish squad at under 21 level, I was a player that you don't necessarily have to have a responsibility defensively. You've got to go out and do your thing. And maybe when I stepped up Premier League level, you start to realise that you can't do that and you've got to start to adapt your game anyway. So, and you're also playing in a side that's not necessarily going to be having a lot of possession. You're going to have to be sitting in against teams and you're going to have to certain style of way, so certain style of play. But I wouldn't necessarily thought in my head consciously. Maybe after 25, 26, when my back did start to give me problems. Certainly before that, even though my game adapted, not necessarily through injury.
Yeah.
I think the injury started to take the toll, certainly once I hit my late 20s, yeah.
It's funny you say that, because I think even you were on Twitter, you had seen the report, Tony O'Donoghue had put it up, of your debut game a couple of months back, and there was an interview you did, you know, ahead of your debut in Iceland, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it's funny, it's coming back to me now, because it struck me at the time, there was a clip of just almost warming up for training or like, you know, passing the ball in a five-a-side or whatever. But you were in it, and whatever age you were then, there was definitely, there was this springiness about you. Like, you look so fast and so sharp. There was a speed to your turn, actually. You know, that ability.
that went when you were watching me later on.
I just thought, geez, I don't remember him being, like, you looked lightning. That was just a clip of training and it's out of context.
I was absolutely... I had pace as a youngster, definitely had pace as a youngster. And that was maybe one thing. I wouldn't necessarily say that I was lightning quick, but I could hold me on with the quickest in any football club, if you know what I mean, or any team.
Yeah.
And I think as I got older, I think maybe, you know, maybe certain ways I was saying before, I adapted my own style, maybe a confidence thing as well, where I felt as though that once I'd stepped up to Premier League level as well, I had to maybe adapt the games to fit in and things like that to almost to hold on. You know, if you're not playing well, when I first stepped up to Sunderland, I wasn't playing well. And I felt as though that I had to adapt my game to try and stay in the side. And I think maybe if it's not a criticism of Peter Reid or anything like that, who was my Premier League manager, but if I had a manager that could have sat down with me then and gone through little clips with me personally and said, look, you don't necessarily have to get bogged down with having to change things. You don't necessarily have to be doing this. Play the game that you've obviously played while trying to adapt it. And I think that my game could have... you obviously have regrets across the course of your career and you look back at certain things that would have happened. But I didn't necessarily need to change my game the way that I certainly changed it anyway. That's what I would say, yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about United and Liverpool and this race for top four, but a brief tangent. I know you were looking on at the James McLean story, which blew up in a big way. And
yeah,
you made an interesting point on Twitter. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but to the effect that, you know, you were one of those players who, with the poppy thing, didn't feel great about wearing it, but just decided to go along with it and not try to kick up a storm. And you felt that would be an experience not dissimilar to lots of Irish players over there.
Yeah, I said that. And I'd spoken about that on air as well with you guys over the years as well. I don't know when the poppy became... was certainly on shirts, maybe mid-2000s it probably would have been. All of a sudden the poppy became a thing where it was on the shirts. And I remember myself and other Irish players would have spoken about it. We did at the time, but we just went with it. It was just something that, you know, I do remember with James that I felt as though that the statement that was made around him when he refused to wear the poppy for the first time at Sunderland wasn't great at all. I think he was hung out to dry. I do think that, and that's where
I don't really remember that. They just
he didn't wear the poppy initially, and obviously there was no statement that James had made.
Yeah.
But the Sunderland on his behalf, or Sunderland made a statement on the club's behalf to say that he's refused to wear it without necessarily going to him and asking him. It was just a statement that was made. It was almost as if they made it behind his back in many respects. And I think they hung him out to dry on that one. I do believe that at the time. And that's where it's gone from there. That all of a sudden, well, this guy's disrespecting us. He's disrespecting our country, disrespecting our supporters, our club.
Yeah.
And I think with me, and I maybe look a bit of regret myself, absolutely, that, and maybe many other Irish players would have done over the years as well, that if it would have been a standalone thing with James McLean and I would have been playing Premier League football at that particular time, it is easy to say, don't get me wrong, but I'm sure that there would have been a lot more players who have spoken about it that would have said, well, look, no, we've got to stand with him here on this one. This is more than just James being on his own, coming out saying that he's not going to wear a poppy, because there are a lot of Irish players over the years that would have spoken about it and wouldn't have done if they'd have actually been given the choice rather than actually just turn up for the game on the Saturday or whatever day it would have been and just expected to go and wear the shirt.
Mm. And would you have regrets? I know, you were towards the end of your career when he made the stand, but would you have regrets that you didn't join him or you didn't?
I think I was finished. I was finished.
You were gone, yeah.
No, I was finished. I was gone
by 2012, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was gone, yeah. Do you know what? At the time, it was almost a thing that seemed to rear its ugly head for the week leading up to Remembrance Day, wasn't it? It was something that came up. It was like, oh, here we go again. James is going to get it. But I don't think any of us were probably aware of the extent that, only maybe in the last couple of years, but certainly initially, the extent of the abuse that he was getting consistently across the year, not just off the back of Remembrance Day, but also at every game. That, I mean, I remember I went probably maybe 2015, 16. I was covering was James playing at Wigan at the time? I think he was actually playing at Wigan early 2000, maybe 2013, 14. And I think I was doing a game, went to watch, and James was getting abuse from his own supporters. And I just thought to myself, Jesus Christ, like, you know, it wasn't great to see. And it wasn't how he was playing. It wasn't down to his ability whatsoever. The negativity set in almost in the warm-up prior to the game, and that was then building throughout the game. And no matter what anyone says, you know, James has always come out in defiance over the years. He's always said, look, you know, I thrive off it, the abuse that I've got, and it's been something to spur me on a little bit. But no one's going to be able to perform with that level of abuse that's come his way even in, as I said, in warm-ups and in the early stages of the game without anything really majorly happening with him as a player. He's not necessarily even contributed to the game, yet he was getting abuse.
Yeah. And the messages he's brought to light recently are just horrific. I mean, hopefully that leads to some sort of stand taken by social media companies. I don't really think you're going to get through to all the idiots out there, because there's always going to be another idiot.
No. Would have always been there, Joe. I'm not being funny, Joe. It's always been there. And not just like, you know, I'm not just jumping. I remember I was playing, it was years ago, I was actually playing at Wickham. I always remember it was Wickham. I'm not too sure. I think it was at Preston. So it was maybe the early days where you start to have a flag by the side of a player's name. I could have been at West Brom. I think I was at West Brom as well. But I remember playing and I was out in a wider area, close to supporters, and I got a shout from one of the supporters, "You Fenian, whatever." I looked around and I was like, how does this guy even know me? I think I actually was at Preston because I was only about 18, 19 at the time. I was like, how does this guy even know me? But it was obviously through a program that they'd seen maybe the flag next to my name. I was playing the 21 football maybe at the time. And so we're going back even, you know, it was a lot more probably vocal then where, if a player was going to get abuse, it would be probably abuse if he was out having a drink with the lads or wherever it would be. It has changed. There's a subtle element to it now, but it's a lot more severe because it's a lot more personal. But it was happening 30 years ago. It was happening 25, 30 years ago. Yeah. But it was just that it's just now it's you're getting struck directly to James and you're getting the abuse and the level that he's at is way more than anything that I would have ever received. But let's be honest. But it just brought me back to a little time where you think, this guy doesn't even know me. You know, I've had stick for being English. You know, that's been the thing. You're English so-and-so. When I, you know, you're trying to say, geez, give me a piss off and leave me alone here.
Nobody wants you.
I'm Irish.
Nobody wants you. we'll take a short break. Got to talk to Kev about Liverpool, Chelsea Thursday and Manchester United as well. Our football coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Back in a sec.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now, you're very welcome back. Three matches in the Premier League this evening. Burnley and Leicester drew 1-1 earlier on. We also had a 1-0 win for Sheffield United against Aston Villa. In fairness to Sheffield United and their players, even though relegation beckons, they have not thrown in the towel. It's very admirable. So 1-0 win for them against Aston Villa this evening. And on the hour mark, still no breakthrough at Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace 0, Manchester United 0 is the latest. Now, if you're just tuning in, you've missed the first part of the football show with Kevin Kilbane. He joined us earlier on before coming on air. He gave us a bit of his time. It was good to catch up with Kev again. It's been a while. So we'll pick things up here. Part two with Kev. Now, you're very welcome back to the football show. Kevin Kilbane is with us. This race for top four is interesting. We have Liverpool, Chelsea on Thursday. Tuchel against Klopp. 14 previous meetings. They had a lot of Mainz, Dortmund meetings. Klopp's won 9. Yeah. Tuchel has won 2. And the top four ahead of this evening, we're obviously speaking before United and Leicester play tonight, but 26 games in, United are second. They're on 50 points. Leicester a point back on 49. West Ham and David Moyes, 45 points. And then we have in fifth place, Chelsea are on 44. Liverpool and Everton are in sixth and seventh on 43. So this is all really bunched. So United down to Chelsea in fifth, United in second, down to Chelsea in fifth is 6 points, 7 points back to Liverpool. I mean, it's getting squeaky. One of Chelsea or Liverpool are probably going to miss out here unless David Moyes really surprises us all. I know you're happy to see him doing so well.
Yeah, it's been great. I know I'd spoken to JP a couple of weeks ago. You tried to get me on when there was a real resurgence under David Moyes. But Joe, he's a good coach. He's a good manager. Mm. Very, very good coach and manager, actually. And maybe he's had a bum deal over the years and there's been a lot of criticism that he's received. And I just think that feeling, and I know we spoke earlier on just there about James and the negativity around social media. The social media can judge or cloud people's minds so much. David Moyes got so much stick because of the power of Man United and the might that they are. Mm. And his time there, but let's be honest, David Moyes didn't do as if you look at it now in comparison with Mourinho and Van Gaal and all these managers that have gone in, he was on a par with them, wasn't he? Let's be honest. So he was maybe getting the older players that were coming off the back of Ferguson, that maybe one or two of them haven't been too kind to him as well within the media, I'd feel as though as well, that was maybe playing during the Ferguson era. But honestly, I can't understand how anyone could have any sort of criticism of David Moyes as a player day-to-day with what he does, how he organises, how he gets his side set up, how he trains the players. You know, I'm talking about purely from an enjoyment part of point of view as well, how fit you feel when you're playing for David Moyes.
Right.
I don't feel as though that any player could have any sort of issues with that. And I think they're getting the benefit of that now, West Ham. They've got one or two decent players.
It's funny, on the fitness point, when you're playing for David Moyes, one of the complaints I remember now from his time at United was they were distraught, it seemed, that he had got rid of the oven chips. And, you know, these are the kind of things being said about him. It's because I wouldn't, obviously, having not played for him, understand him the way you did. But looking in from afar, I really thought when he was at Sunderland in particular, and that was probably a bad job to take, but maybe he had no option but to take the job. But he was so negative, understandably, and, you know, because they weren't buying anyone and he wasn't being backed and he knew they were goosed. But he was so negative and, you know, silly, superficial things. Like, it was around that time he was turning a bit grey. It's just the colour went out of him. And you thought all that vitality that was there at Goodison Park. Yeah. Was gone. And my sense was, I wonder has United just knocked the stuffing out of him and whatever bit of fire is there is gone. So I'm really delighted to see it hasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. I think Sunderland was probably the wrong job to take. Anybody that would have spoken about that regime in at Sunderland, any manager that I've spoken to that have been in there, just said, you know, it's impossible. It's impossible to work for the club. But I know what you're saying. You've got to look at it from, you've got to get on with it, haven't you? It's how you're coming across, how you portray yourself. And maybe he'd look at himself and think that I could have done things differently. But I think, first of all, he absolutely would never have taken that job, given what happened internally, regardless of the results and what happened around it. He absolutely wouldn't have taken that job. But since then, he maybe had to go away and look at himself a little bit. He did a little bit of media as well. I think that, you know, it can maybe give people a different perception of you as well, that, you know, that you are a little bit more, down to earth, and you are someone who you can listen to as well. I mean, I couldn't speak highly enough of David, because I've known him since I was 15. So, you know, he was a huge part of my early career at Preston, obviously signed me at Everton. So I couldn't say anything negative to him. So I my judgment is going to be a little bit different from maybe one or two others.
Yeah.
But I'm judging him solely from being certainly at Everton, but I think he had to upset a few people at Everton when he first went in there as well. Some of the big earners, some of the big hitters at the club. And gradually, you know, month after month, he started to turn people and he started to get everybody on side. And the job that he did there was remarkable. Don't get me, it was absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see him getting a little bit of joy now and the rewards that's coming his way, because West Ham actually played. I mean, you've probably seen them, Joe.
Yeah,
they're actually really, they're good to watch.
They're good to watch.
Really good to watch. Yeah. Really, really good side.
They have players getting beyond the ball, and they are good to watch. And they were good at the weekend, even against City. You know, they had to fight.
They were.
City had to fight to win that game. So it's lovely for him, because it now bookends his career, as opposed to did great at Everton, didn't cut the mustard at United, disappeared. It's now did really brilliantly at Everton, wasn't given the time at United, and has shown everyone 20 years almost since he took over at Everton, this guy knows what he's doing. So I think for him, with his feet up in retirement and later life, that's a much nicer story to live.
I think it is, yeah. I think regardless of what happens in this season out at West Ham, there is a little bit more credibility for him now. I think he'd probably feel, because, you know, managers, whenever you've spoken to them, you know, you've spoken to certain managers over the years, you're going to take things serious. You're going to take things personally, aren't you? Little things that's spoken about you, everything that's, because you only need to watch Sky Sports now, and every single manager's been scrutinized down to every single thing that they're saying, doing, how the certain players performing on the pitch, and would they have done things differently. So David Moyes, I knowing him as well, he would take a lot of that personally.
Right.
He would, the criticism that's come his way. So it is nice to see now, and more for his family as well, that, you know, I'm sure it's nice for him going out and having a meal now and things like that, because he's maybe finally got that little thing off his back from Man United to an extent.
Yeah. So let's politely assume for a second West Ham do drift away a touch and we're left with Chelsea and Liverpool.
This game, that's what you imagine. You do imagine that's going to happen, don't you?
So, yeah, probably. I mean, that would be extraordinary if it didn't. So suddenly Thursday is a really big game. Chelsea are 1 point ahead of Liverpool.
You're not mentioning Everton, Joe, are you? No, let's see what Everton 40, can do. Yeah,
43 points, Everton, Liverpool, I'm sure. Yeah, Carlo's doing a good job as well. With the Liverpool thing, so I haven't really talked to you much about this. For you, is it pretty much as simple as they've had more injuries than anybody else this season and they're just a bit tired? Or are you starting out to think there might be something more serious going on? I mean, it's all, near impossible, it feels like, to criticise Klopp, but people can draw the parallels with what happened in his final season at Dortmund.
They're all that, but I mean, Joe, I again, you know, when I was regularly on the show with you and we were coming in Monday morning, we were looking at Klopp's sides 4 or 5 years ago now. We were looking at Klopp's sides, weren't we? And we were going, what are they going to do to improve? You know, defensively, they are so bad. Going forward, they look great. They put press on teams. When they're going forward, it's, you know, when they're in the final third, they look so good. Everyone's so positive. Yet their Achilles heel was always the defense. They sign, you know, it's not rocket science at times. You go out and sign the world's best defender and one of the best goalkeepers. Because you only need to look at Van Dijk. You know, Nathan and I were at so many games over the years watching Van Dijk, and you could actually leave him 2v1 against at times with Van Dijk. He just seemed to read a situation so much better than others. He was just incredible at doing it. And he had mistakes here and there, but the mistakes were few and far between. And if I'm looking at Andy Robertson, I think Andy Robertson was incredible because of Van Dijk. Liverpool over the last two seasons, the weakness has been the right side of the defence. Even when Van Dijk's in there, whether that's been Lovren, whether that's been Matic, has looked better with Van Dijk than maybe Gomez or Lovren over the years. But the right side of the defence alongside Trent Alexander-Arnold, I'd feel as though that any diagonal ball was always the one that used to catch them out. Diagonal balls over Trent Alexander-Arnold when he used to push on. I think the recovery runs were poor by both Trent Alexander-Arnold and by Gomez when you were watching them. I don't think they sensed danger quick enough. I think that their game was always on stepping in, much as we spoke about John Stones earlier on. Gomez was always about risk-taking, stepping when the ball's been played through to the striker. If you get caught out, look, I've got Van Dijk there. Whereas now, if Liverpool are trying to do anything like that, I don't feel as though they've got any real organisation as a back four. You look at Jordan Henderson as captain that's playing there. He's uncertain of his own game. So his own game of organising has maybe gone slightly because he's playing out of position and he's uncomfortable playing in that position. So it's, in answer to your original question, they've lost Van Dijk and they've lost, obviously, the defence. It's an easy thing to say, but the whole of the back four has never been perfect, but Van Dijk has made them perfect because of how good he actually is. So it's only logical that you're missing him, that everything else is going to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, sometimes the easiest answer is the right answer, and it's just as simple as Van Dijk and injuries. Clock's coming against us.
Okay. But yeah, that's good. Yeah.
So United, they were flying high, and United fans, I think they generally knew it was a false position when they were top of the table, but they've fallen off quite dramatically now, and their record against the big six we've all seen is pretty paltry. They can't seem to score a goal in the main. Bruno maybe is not looking as good as he had been.
He's probably gone from a 10 out of 10 to a 9.5 out of 10, Joe.
Possibly,
so there you go.
He's certainly not the problem. I'm not saying that, but he can only rescue them so often, I suppose, is the point. I think there's now a reassessment of United. It's hard to know. So they're 14 points better off than they were at this stage last season. So that is big growth, but they still feel a way short of genuinely challenged for a title. Or do you see them doing that next year?
Well, much as maybe we'd be speaking about Liverpool defensively, United's defence does look shaky. The defensive partnership hasn't looked great even over the last couple of seasons. They looked as though they had a settled partnership with Lindelof and Maguire. But both make mistakes. Both do make mistakes. I think they're susceptible to the ball being slid down the side of them. Any sort of ball being played down the side of them, the way that they both turn, or whoever it's been, even, you know, Baye's played a little bit in the spell as well. They looked poor when sides quickly counter against them. United's best performances, I feel, when you've watched them, and I actually enjoy watching them play like it, when they maybe give up possession, when they say, well, look, you're going to have more possession than us. We'll play with 35, 40% of the ball, but we have got that much pace with Martial. Rashford looked great. Fernandes can get forward, and others that have got a bit of pace. Greenwood, whoever it's going to be. That is where I feel as though I've enjoyed watching United, when they've been countering quickly against teams. Because when they try to dominate the ball, I don't think it's as good.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, you won't take them as seriously as you would other teams in terms of title contention until they can, for 60, 70, 80, 90 minutes of a game, dominate possession and look threatening, you know, the way a top team does. They can't just be a counter-attacking team, surely. Now, I know Leicester probably won a league basically counter-attacking, and Kante was superhuman and all the rest. Yeah. But, like, I don't know if Manchester United... They kind of have to aspire to be more than just a counter-attacking team, don't they?
Yeah, I think with Leicester doing that as well, though, even every single week when it came to the next game, you always still feel, it's Leicester. That was that feeling where it's different for United. You know, it's Man United. So you are going to give them that respect, and you're going to drop off them. That's what 50%, 60% of the teams do in the Premier League. Yeah. Come and beat us.
Yeah.
Where United are not great at doing that. United looks sluggish in the final third.
The West Brom 1-0 is an example of.
There's your prime example.
Can't have that.
Yeah. Well, they don't move the ball quick enough when they get over the halfway line. When they get into the final third, I always felt it's been the case over the last couple of seasons as well. It gets sluggish. It starts to slow down. They don't have a De Bruyne, maybe. They don't have someone that's going to seriously get on the ball quickly on the half turn, pass forward quickly, and get runners off in behind defences. Even when defences are deep sometimes, you can still run in behind because it frees up teammates. I feel as though with United, it always seems to be when they get into the final third, everybody seems to come looking for the ball. Everything seems to become congested again, and they don't seem to have any penetration at all. And that's where maybe the West Brom and other teams that have done it to them over the years, over the last couple of seasons especially, have had success, because United do look better playing against better footballing sides, almost teams that are better than them, that you think on paper are better than them. United seem to play a lot better because they can sit deep and counter against them, yeah.
And it's funny, I'm sure they've had conversations and they've identified that point you make, i.e. we're not moving the ball quickly enough. Can we all start moving the ball a bit more quickly in the opposition half?
I think Martial takes too many touches, Joe. You know, the ball goes into Martial, and he's got great ability, but he takes too many touches. He has four when he can have two, or, you know, three when he can have one. It's always slowing down on Martial. It seems to be a common denominator whenever it gets... especially in the final third, where you can't do that. You even look at someone like Riyad Mahrez at City. Mahrez constantly slowed the game down for City. He's even quickening it up now. I think he's learned. If you're going to play Guardiola's side, you take two touches. You'll get the ball somewhere else where you can do a little bit of magic. You've got more space. I don't think Martial, the penny's not dropped with him yet. And that's a continuing criticism that you're going to have of Martial, taking too many touches on the ball.
And I presume it's more than him, though.
Yeah, there are more than him, but I think because you see the ability that Martial has got, you watch him all the time, and you think to yourself, God, there's a player there. What could he become? What could that boy become? And he's not a boy now. He's not like 20 anymore, is he? He's not like kid. He's getting to a stage now where you think maybe that penny has to drop, and he's got to start learning how to adapt against different sides that play different ways, and it just doesn't seem to happen with him.
Final point before I let you go. And I mean, this is great, in fairness to Mick McCarthy. It's just, I mean, like, this guy has had an incredible career. So Cardiff City, when he took over, had lost six in a row. They were in crisis. McCarthy comes in after whatever happened over in Cyprus, God knows.
Yeah.
10 games unbeaten. He has taken 24 points from 30, 7 wins, 3 draws. They beat Derby last night, 4-0, Wayne Rooney's worst defeat as manager. They're now into the top six in the championship. Look, I don't know. People can say about McCarthy very easily, oh, well, he's not a Premier League manager. I mean, who knows? But I tell you what, he knows what he's doing in the championship, and he's had a hell of a career.
Yeah, he does,
And like Cardiff City fans, when he gets the job, are saying, oh, no, oh, no. Yeah. He's past it. I mean, You just got to be happy for him. It's brilliant. Like, that's an incredible impact. And it just shows, a bit like the David Moyes thing, you can write these, you can write people off, but they know what they're doing.
Yeah, he does. And of course, it's an easy criticism. And I think we're certainly with what happened when he took the Ireland job again, it didn't go great, did he? No, let's be honest. But
it was fairly dull.
Yeah. You can say that, but I think it was maybe like that for a while as well, wasn't it? So, you know, maybe there's contributing factors to that. But I think with Mick, I personally love playing under him. I mean, when you and I went to speak to him a few years ago, Joe, as well, do you remember he mentioned to us about 1,000 games in club management? Do you remember that when he mentioned that? And he's on about 900, he was on about 970 around that time. So he's approaching 1,000 games in club management. That's what he wanted. He wanted to have 1,000 games on his resume. And it's looking though that's going to come to fruition now, and probably the next maybe by the end of this season, perhaps. I'm not too sure where he's on. Someone will be able to tell you that. But that's one thing that he mentioned. It looks as though he's going to get his wish, and that's going to happen. Mm. But the team themselves, if you look at Cardiff, I do you know what, Joe? I've only seen the results. I'm like yourself. You've seen the odd goal here and there. I've not watched Cardiff live since he's taken over, so I'd be guessing a bit. But I know what he's like when he goes in. You know, lads onto him. He's got a way about him where he can make you feel good about yourself immediately. And ultimately, when you're off the back of six defeats, what you need is someone that's going to come in and make you feel good about yourself. And that's what Mick's done. So it's great. And hopefully Cardiff get promoted, because I'll be cheering him on there.
Yeah, he's very charismatic. He seems like a very decent man ultimately, and you kind of respect.
Absolutely. I couldn't. Yeah, he is. He's a gentleman, but he's also he's a tough man. You know, you're never going to be able to go and get the better of him over in a war of words or anything like that. But also he's a man who knows how to read people. Absolutely is. And he is great. Yeah.
Listen, I've taken up enough of your time. This has been great. Let's do a catch up every couple of months like this, and I'll get your views in the game. I know you're always watching left wingers. Is anyone catching your eye?
Yeah, very good. Yeah. The two I think certainly at Wolves, if you've been watching Wolves this season, Neto at Wolves.
I haven't seen much Wolves this year for some reason.
Joe, you'd like this. You'd like him. You'd like Neto. Neto he plays off the right at times. He can play on the left. Nuno's been moving him from Joe. Wow, this boy can play. Absolutely. He's got great balance. He can dribble. He can shoot. He can cross on the run as well. I really like him. I think he's probably a player that's destined to go to one of the really big boys. I'd feel Neto. I think if you're looking at him the way that he is, maybe a little bit inconsistent. He's still young, but I think that's going to come with him. And I'd hope that that'll be the case with him anyway. And the other one is probably Dwight McNeil. Nathan was on the other week to me, and I text Nathan. I said, look, I'm really like watching this kid at Burnley. I think he's destined to go on as well. I think he's going to leave Burnley within the next year. Can he go to a top four club? I think he probably can, but he's maybe got to adapt his game a little bit, certainly upon leaving Burnley. It might not necessarily be the right move. He might need to maybe go to, I don't know, maybe want to say an Everton or something like that at the moment. I think he'd fit in well there. But again, excellent dribbler. I think he's become a lot cleverer, McNeil, as well. He plays on the inside a little bit at times for Burnley, playing off the strike as well now, but also an excellent crosser on the run. So they're the two that I've really been impressed with. Yeah, absolutely.
Kevin Kilbane, pleasure, my man. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.